The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome in Rose City to another edition of the Soccer Made in Portland podcast. It's a beautiful July morning here in the Rose City. Ryan Clark here, joined by Chris Reifer. Chris, how are we doing today, my man?
Great. You know, we're going to have a nice little run of beautiful days. Sunday for the game against the Whitecaps looks like it's just going to be like phenomenal. High of 79, partly cloudy. These are the days we live for, everybody. This is like the original promise of Pacific Northwest summer, that has not always been fulfilled, and it is now being fulfilled. So bask in it.
Truly. You know, I walked out this morning to let the dog out, and, you know, cool breeze wash over my face, just really, you know, get to absorb the full gravity of a Pacific Northwest summer. It was magical.
The vibes were high here, on the dog walk this morning as well. Jerry very, very nearly had an opportunity to, he's a bit of a hunter. He considers himself a sports dog. he very nearly had the opportunity to catch a mole, which he's only done once before. And it was just like the best day of his life. He was very close. I was sort of the bad guy on that. There were like some kids coming down the sidewalk the other direction. And I was like, I can't do, like, not in front of the kids, Jerry. but the weather was beautiful. The conditions were phenomenal. And Jerry, you know, just was eating it up.
Love it. Love the hunter's instinct from Jerry. You know who else had a hunter's instinct in the last week is the Portland Timbers. They went up to Seattle and went on a hunt of their own, gutted a few fish along the way, and got a 3-0 victory over the Seattle Sounders. Really a season-defining win, I think, for Gio Savarese and company. Gio continues to be undefeated up in Seattle, something that, you know, he's humble about it in public, but I'm sure he absolutely loves it in private. I mean, you saw the videos in the locker room of him doing the chants, albeit partially incorrectly, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the precision wasn't optimal. He very nearly crushed that whiteboard. Like that whiteboard like has a thing or two to say about that.
Yeah, he smacked that whiteboard harder than the team smacked the Sounders in that game. And that was pretty hard.
It was pretty hard.
Yeah, it was pretty hard. Up 1-0, you know, they were looking like, you know, maybe they might give it up in the second half just based on the opportunities that Seattle was playing for. And then suddenly, you know, Eric Williamson draws this foul. Bam. The Sounders down to 10 men, and that changes everything, really, at that point. A game that the Timbers had played very well to be up in, they were able to essentially cement their victory after that, knock in a couple goals down the stretch to make it 3-0. Most dominant road win in Seattle in a long time. Really an impressive performance overall from the team. Top to bottom, very little to discuss in the way of criticism, just based on the second half alone, at least.
I mean, you know me, I can find some.
Oh,
if we
sure.
really want to do that.
Believe me, we can. that is, in fact, part of our jobs here is to be at least partially critical and not, you know, jump for joy and skip through meadows when things are going well. But really strong game for the Timbers. And I think that it can serve as a catalyst beyond the level of play that they've already been at, a catalyst to continue to play well into these next two games. You know, you have Vancouver up next and then San Jose after that. Those are two winnable home games. You get 6 points out of that and you're in the top four in all likelihood in the Western Conference, which is nuts to think about being a possibility for a team that, you know, was in wooden spoon territory just a few weeks ago. And they knew they had to have this type of turnaround in order to to make a run into the postseason. Maybe this is truly the start of it.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be. It reminds me of a line from one of my favorite bands, American Aquarium. Going to see him next month in Bend, I think. The harder you work, the luckier you get. I think it's just more generally an idiom, but they have a great song about it. In any event, I think that's been sort of how you sum up the Timbers last few weeks. They have played very, very well, and they've now squeezed out. You know, everybody's been talking about the 4-game stretch. I think you can go back one more. It was a little bit disappointing draw at the LA Galaxy to give up a goal and. In the waning minutes to draw 1-1, but that's still not a draw you're going to shake a stick at by any means. And so, you know, I mean, you look at the last 5 games, they've had 3 road games against expected Western Conference playoff teams. The Sounders are sitting just below the red line right now. The other two, Nashville and LA Galaxy, are above the red line. And then 2 home games against teams that are currently sitting outside the playoffs. And they've won 3 and drawn 2. That's really, really good. That is exactly the kind of Supporter Shield level soccer, albeit on a shorter, smaller timeline than the Timbers will ultimately need. But that's exactly the kind of Supporter Shield level soccer that we've been talking about the Timbers needing to play if they wanted to get back into the playoff race from the Wooden Spoon race. That is what the Timbers need, and they've worked hard to do it. And I think full credit to them. But the second part of that is the luckier you get, right? It's not just the harder you work; it's the luckier you get as well. And the Timbers have also gotten some good luck in the table. It's funny, other than Austin and LAFC, who both seem to be runaway trains in the West right now, the 3-7 spots in the West have basically just gone in the tank the last few weeks. A couple of weeks ago, the 7th spot was at 1.5 points per game, and it was sort of between that and about 1.8 points per game for 3-7 for those 5 teams. Now all those teams are between 1.4 and 1.5 points per game, and so it's sort of just been a landslide in that part of the table. And when you combine those two things, now the Timbers are kind of just right on the cusp of that race. They're sitting at 1.3 points per game. They're less than 0.1 point per game away from the Sounders. They're 1/10 of a point per game away from the red line. And that's the kind of swing that can change pretty easily in a week or two. Now, I mean, I don't expect things to stay. I mean, those 3-7 spots are not going to keep sliding back to them, right? I mean, there are going to be teams that recover and even surge from here. But the combination of the Timbers playing a lot better and doing a lot better job of getting results, their 3 wins in the last 5 equal the number that they had in the previous 15. So they, I mean, you know, it is beyond obvious that their results have gotten a lot better. But that combined with some stumbles from key teams ahead of them have now put the Timbers right in the thick of it. And I think that's great in terms of a little mindset shift, because it's not about climbing a mountain or digging a hole anymore. Now they're in the fight. And that doesn't change the urgency at all. At the end of the day, 1.3 points per game ain't shoot, right? Like nobody's putting that on their resume. And so the Timbers haven't really accomplished anything yet, but they've done well enough to put themselves in a position where they now can. And full credit to them for doing that. It wasn't clear at all at the beginning of the stretch that was going to be possible, that they were going to be in any spot even remotely resembling this at this point. So credit to them for doing what they need to do over the stretch. And yeah, the game against the Sounders. Well, I'll kick it to you. What was your sort of biggest takeaway from that game itself?
My biggest takeaway was we were wrong. We've talked a lot about Yaroslav Nizgoda this season, yep. And his lack of efficiency, his struggles in the first half of the season. And I think the biggest takeaway I took from that game was that he's back. He's legit fully back. He's contributing well. And he's one of the most efficient goal scorers in MLS right now, period. Yep. And This is the form that they need out of him as their as one of their DPs. I mean, he is the type of guy that has thrived really over the last few games for the Timbers. Goal and assist against Seattle, particularly that first goal, tremendous stuff.
Really good goal. Yeah. Yeah. Nice run to that back post and then a good tight angle finish.
Yeah. They just need him to have those type of bursts and finish with class the way that he did. That was the largest takeaway for me from that game. I think additionally, you know, confidence is something that stood out to me. There was a pretty serious lack of it throughout pretty much the entire first half of the season. Now, yeah. Obviously injuries contributed to that. It's harder to get wins and stay confident and feel good about yourself when every game, it seems like there's a new guy missing or suspended for a red card or, you know, everything else that went wrong in the first half of the season. But, for confidence's sake, this is as good as it gets, right? You go on the road, you beat the snot out of your rival, and you come running off the field, feeling great, feeling good about your chances to make another run because you've done this before. You know, it's not like this Timbers team is just chock full of young contributors who, don't really vibe with the culture or understand what it means to succeed within this franchise. Every one of these guys, for the most part, in the primary lineups for the Timbers, they've been here before. They were almost all here last year in this exact same scenario, right? Not quite as dire, but very much a similar scenario.
Yeah, not great.
No.
In any event.
You look at the chart that shows the team points and you know, the it's a little flatter in the first half of the season, and then it starts to tick up and up. It's the same type of pattern, essentially, this season as it was last year. But, you know, for the sake of confidence, for the sake of making a legitimate run, everybody's kind of coming into form at the right time for that to occur. The Timbers won't have Eric Williamson against Vancouver because of card accumulation, but he's a guy that I think is emerging as their best player. I think he's somebody who, I think it's five assists in the last six games or something to that effect for Eric. Just the way he affects the game is unlike anybody on the field. You know, Seba Blanco is still the most talented player on the field for them. But at this stage in his career, he's not contributing at the level that he might have a couple of years ago. Eric Williamson is the guy for this team when he's healthy. And he is what makes them go. I think about a player on the Thorns that kind of runs the show from the midfield in Hina Sugita. As a comparable type of player, you know, for this team, the Timbers, Eric Williamson is that guy. And I've enjoyed watching him play. I've enjoyed the emergence of Nies Gota. I think that Seba is rounding into a higher level of endurance than he had at the start of the season. It was a bit of a long road to get him to this point, but I think he's not going to have to rest as much the back half of the season as he did maybe in the early going. So that's good for them. Other contributors like Dairon Asprilla, who obviously has had a rough season by his standards, are coming in and making legitimate contributions. You know, he hit a PK. He had a great celebration to tearing off the jersey and showcasing the, picture of his father on his chest, which was really cool. And you look at a guy like Santiago Moreno as another one that we could discuss at length, who is a young player that I think is really coming into their own and showcasing why the Timbers believe so much in him and believe that the future is very bright for him. Because in his second year with this club, he's showcasing that he could be a legitimate long-term piece that you can build around in the future if he continues to develop in the way that he has.
I'm going to pick up where you left off with Santi Moreno. You want to talk about somebody who is building in confidence. And that is Santi. I loved the fact that he stepped up to the penalty spot and said, I want this one again. After he took one, what was it, two games ago? Two or three games ago and did really well with it, sort of put it top corner into a spot where it was unsavable. He stepped back up in Seattle in a big spot, in a big circumstance, and said, I want it again. I've earned this. And another one, unsavable. No goalkeeper is getting to that penalty into the side netting, hit at the pace that it was. And I love the fact that he is stepping up with, you know, other good players on the field. He's stepping up and saying, I can do this, because I think he's got the talent that if you combine that attitude, that talent and work ethic, you're gonna get something special, and you're gonna get the kind of player who can frankly not be in MLS very long. if he's able to put those things together. And so I loved the fact that he stood up to the penalty spot, took control of that, and just said, this is mine and the game's over. So I agree on that one. I'm really excited to see what we're going to get in the second half of the season from him, because if that's the attitude that he's going to have on the rest of the field, I think he could tear some stuff up. I disagree with you a little bit on Yaroslav Nizhgoda. And the part I disagree with you on is the part where we were wrong. I don't think we were wrong. I mean, I think our criticism of him at the time was right. But it's only a fool who believes on Wednesday what he believed on Monday, regardless what happens on Tuesday, right? And you know, I mean, when he wasn't scoring goals, it was right to say that in light of him not scoring goals and not being there for chances and not sort of having the other contributions on the field defensively in hold up play and those kinds of things that you want to see from a striker, that he couldn't continue to be the option. But he has started scoring those goals again. And I think that makes the question for the Timbers even a little bit harder. Because the answer earlier when he wasn't scoring goals was pretty obvious, right? We got to do something different at that position, whether it's Felipe Moore getting healthy or whether it's going out and signing somebody else to come in and play there. Got to do something different. I think if he continues to do this, then that question is a lot harder. I still think it's a question, though, to be honest.
I do too. I think that his play validates their desire to prioritize getting a right back first. Yeah, because there are some right. Timbers fans out there who, you know, rightfully, just given the way that Yara including was me. Playing, including you, who were saying, you know, screw the right back position. Let's go out and spend some big dollars on some DP striker, you know, ditch Nizhgoda and fill that spot with somebody that you'd spend a whole bunch of money on. Right. But I think that given the play of Nizhgoda and the opportunity to reintegrate Felipe Mora, who hasn't really contributed anything yet, but should eventually given his talent, it validates that. It validates the fact that the number one position of need right now for them to make this final run is to snag a right back in this window. I can tell you, I haven't heard anything specific in the way of rumors, but at this point, that is still their number one priority. And I would expect something to get done at that position by the end of this window. With the striker position, though, I think Yarrow's got it locked down at the very least for the rest of this season. Maybe they
between he and Mora. I don't think he's an in pin starter by any means. Sure. And just because, you know, I mean, just like you shouldn't believe on Wednesday what you believed on Monday, regardless what happens on Tuesday, you also shouldn't believe on Friday what you believed on Wednesday, regardless what happens on Thursday. And I think when you've got a player, yeah, I can do this all day. If you want me to go through the days of the week, I can just.
Well, you got all five of the weekdays down. So
that's right. You get the weekends off. You can believe whatever you want on the weekend.
So I can. What you're telling me is I can believe on Sunday what I believed on Friday, even if something changes on Saturday.
That's right. You get a little bit of a pass.
Okay, good. That's good. I don't want to have to think about all these different days over the weekend. I just want to kind of vibe. So.
And this is why we record this podcast on Thursdays, because we want to make sure that we're in a window where we're, you know, thinking rationally about these things, and having sober analysis, not, you know, just vibe based hot takes.
Although we do often comment on the vibes. The vibes, that's right. It seems to be a running theme of this podcast to discuss where the vibes stand with each team.
But the substantive point about Nishikota is when you've got a guy who is so kind of dependent on having what is an incredibly high efficiency strike rate in providing value, he's always standing on a little bit of a cliff edge. Right. He's always standing it doesn't take much for his value to the team to just totally tank. And I think that's basically the cliff edge that the Timbers have been standing on and sometimes falling over all year this year. And so I think there is reasonable, you know, question or concern about sort of what it's going to be like going forward, because, you know, he is a really efficient finisher. I think he's probably established that. But even among really efficient finishers, there's always sort of a question of what is just being sort of normal efficiency and what is unsustainable efficiency. And I think that's basically always going to be a question for him. So I think that situation is in flux, but I also think he has reinserted himself back into the conversation. Whereas before, I don't think he was even in the conversation. It was just sort of and the Timbers seem to be acknowledging this, almost a foregone conclusion that they were going to be moving on from him. So, you know, we'll see how it goes over the course of the season. I think that position remains one that's going to be in flux. But I also agree with you that although there was a little bit of discussion about perhaps whether he would be, you know, they would be doing something different at that position in the window, I think it's going to be Mora and Nishikota for the rest of the year, and that's now very, very clear. I agree with you entirely with respect to Williamson. I think, you know, we are seeing him now get fully into form, fully into fitness. I actually don't hate the fact that he has a week off this week to rest a little bit, given that they've had to manage his minutes a little bit, just as he gets fully back into form and fitness. And Christian Paredes is a guy, I mean, you talk about a one player who generally played pretty well over the course of a disappointing beginning to the season. That was Paredes, right? Paredes was one of the Timbers' most consistent performers in what was otherwise kind of a calamity through the first half. And so, you know, I mean, he is not a guy who you want to be out of the rotation. And I don't think he's a guy who will be. And so, you know, having him step in for a game is not something that causes me concern. But I think Williamson is showing you that when he's in form and when he's fit, he's one of the Timbers' best players. And he's one of the best, you know, sort of 8-10s central midfielders in the league. He's a guy who, frankly, if the national team wasn't so stacked at that exact position, and it might be the national team's deepest position, but if it wasn't so stacked, I mean, in many, many other cycles, Eric Williamson would be in the national team picture, is sort of when he's at peak form and fitness, because that's just the quality.
No, and I think if he was healthier too, you know, it'd be more of a discussion than it is. I think that the national team has probably taken a wait and see approach with him, given their depth at that position. But yeah, I mean, he strikes me as a guy who, you know, is returning back to that level he was at before that injury as somebody who is on that track for sure.
Yeah. I think it's really tough for the national team. I think it'll be really difficult for him to break. I mean, look, they have sort of in that spot, they've played Weston McKennie. They've played Gio Reyna there a little bit. The Yunus Musa, given that Adams has kind of played the six, Yunus Musa sort of steps into kind of that spot. Although I think Williamson probably fits most as the most advanced of the three in the U.S. 4-3-3. Luca De La Torre has looked really good in that position when he's played, sort of coming off the bench. I think that's a really that's about the hardest position on the team to break into. And so, you know, that's a little bit unfortunate for him. If Eric Williamson was a nine, there would be real conversations about whether he'd be in the team. But I think it's a difficult one just for that reason. But, you know, I mean, look, his club form has been brilliant the last few weeks as he's getting back into it. And that's ultimately what matters for purposes of this podcast. And you know, I mean, he is a guy who you know, has the ability, the intelligence and everything to be a leader on the team. And I think that's what we're seeing. Still got to get a little sharper on the defensive side of the ball. And I think, in the first half, especially against Seattle, they were caught a couple times, including with the yellow card and in a couple other moments where Williamson was a little bit late, on the defensive side of the ball. But I frankly don't worry about that too much because we've seen him be a pretty solid contributor on the defensive side. I think that's just a matter of, you know, one of the final parts of the process of getting back fully into form and fitness and getting game moments and just starting to get a feel for timing some of the rotations and timing some of the challenges. So I don't worry about that too much, but it's still an area where I think he's got a little bit of sharpening yet to do.
I agree for sure. You know, I just think his contributions on the other end are so immense that, you know, it's easy to forget maybe some of those lapses, you know.
Well, he's strong. You know, I mean, even with some of those lapses, and they're not huge lapses. I mean, I wouldn't go nearly as far as to say he's a liability on that side of the ball. But you know, I mean, even with some of those, what he provides going forward and what he provides in possession makes it easy to live with. Gio doesn't lose any sleep over that.
No, he doesn't. Speaking of Gio, before we end this Timber segment and move on to the Thorns, today is Gio Savarese's 51st birthday. Congratulations and happy birthday to Gio. Definitely does not carry himself like somebody in their 50s. That's a guy with the zeal and energy of someone many decades his junior. So really great personality.
Many decades his junior? Like how many are you saying Gio has the energy of a 21-year-old?
I would say multiple decades then. So
31?
A 31-year-old man. Okay. Yeah. Yes. I mean, he's out there running with him like pretty consistently at training. You know, he has not really slowed down. You know, just because a man gardens as frequently as Giovanni Savarese does not mean he's going gentle into that good night. You know, he's very much a guy that is youthful in his approach to life and approaches it with joy, which I think we could all do.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
I just
happy
saw
birthday to Gio.
Yes. Yeah. Happy birthday to Gio. What I was going to say was that I just saw Marcel the Shell with Shoes On last night at the film from A24. And this is not a plug, by the way, for those who think that we might be sponsored by A24 or this film. On the subject of joy, really excellent movie. Brought me to tears. It was tremendous. To think that a little stop motion shell with a pretty annoying voice, just objectively, from Jenny Slate, the comedian who voices Marcel, to think that would stir one's soul and make one reflect on the human experience and the value of community, I think is a testament to the filmmakers. So just wanted to fit that quick movie review in before we move on to what our actual job is here, what my actual job is here, and that's covering the Timbers and Thorns. The Thorns, they drew OL Reign 2-2 in their last game.
Also a good result at
also Lumen a Field. Very good result at Lumen Field, especially given what they were missing. You know, both teams were missing players, but it seemed pretty clear from the outset that the Thorns were a little bit outmatched, given what the Reign still had left over from national team duty. And I thought that this was one of the best displays of the culture that Rian Wilkinson has instilled in this team that we've seen all season. They fought and fought and got this result. They were up 2-1. So, you know, the disappointment was obviously there post game that they fell back into the draw. But to get a point out of that game in a stretch where, you know, you're not going to be at your best and you're missing more key contributors, I think, than almost anybody in NWSL. Between the U.S. women's national team, the Canada national team, and others that have been busy with Thorns contributors. You know, Sam Coffey just got called back to the national team. That's going to be...
Talk about that in a second.
Yes, we can. The realities of that are interesting because, you know... We'll talk about it, but, yeah. But you know,
let's focus on the game. We'll talk about that. Those shenanigans, yes, shortly.
Those shenanigans will be discussed. Either way, the Rain game was really strong for the team. I think that Rian Wilkinson was more than pleased with the performance. Maybe not the result. I think she thought they could definitely get 3 points out of the way that they played. But it is what it is at this point. I think they have one more game now here against Gotham on Saturday. That'll be the last one before they finally get their full cast of characters back, because their next game isn't until July 29th against Racing Louisville, and that's on the road. So bringing everybody back will be nice to get this team rolling as the late season progresses, because they're still in a strong position. You know, they're one of the better teams in NWSL, currently sitting at third in the standings with 18 points, one ahead of OL Reign. So they maintain their position with this point split that they had with the Reign. 2 points back of the Red Stars for second, and 3 points back of the San Diego Wave for first. I envision Portland without a doubt finishing in the top three. The question is, how high can they get with the full cast of characters back, making this stretch run to try and get home field advantage throughout the playoffs? Because this is obviously an atmosphere in Portland that any team would be glad to have in a postseason run. Portland had it before losing to the Red Stars last year. But regardless, you know, that is what you want when you're the best team, I think, in NWSL, is to have that home field advantage all the way.
That was so the game in Seattle against the Reign was, first of all, really good game. Both teams were really heavily limited by primarily international absences. And I thought that was a really high level game for the personnel that both the teams had available. I do want to put a note on something that a lot of people talked about online, including some players. That game can't be on Twitch. Like, I don't care who's missing. I don't care who's on national team duty. That is way too good of a game, and that's way too high stakes a game for NWSL to be broadcasting on Twitch.
Right, and they're billing it as best rivalry in global women's soccer,
right?
In a lot of ways, and in a lot of ways, that's true. So, if that's the case, whomever is in charge of these TV deals and organizing things, get that thing on big CBS, man. And if you can't do that because of some other conflict, at the very least, get it on CBS Sports Network. This should be a televised event. Easy to access via stream and easy to access for those with cable. Right. It made zero sense to me that we were sitting there watching this game and it was on Twitch and it was buzzing out and causing freezing.
The production value was terrible.
The production value sucked. It was just something that did not rise to the level of the quality of the game. And I think it's ridiculous at this point that, you know, players have to go on social media and complain about the quality of the broadcast when these are among the best athletes in their sport in the world.
And credit to them for doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is what makes NWSL such a strong league when it comes to the voices of the players is their willingness to, when they see something that's obviously BS, they call it out. And, yeah, and there's multiple players. Yes. And they're effective in fomenting that change with their voices. But I agree. I just think it's ridiculous that a game of this caliber would be not only on Twitch, but broadcast in such a poor manner on Twitch where it's freezing and not high quality at all.
And it ends up doing a disservice, getting back to sort of the original point. It does a disservice to the 22 players that were on the field at any given time, right? Because there were a lot of players, a lot of whom, you know, sort of just non-Rain fans or non-Thorns fans don't know or don't know well, who were showing out. And they deserved to have a stage with the way they are playing and with the quality of the game and the quality of the product, frankly, that they were delivering to their fans. So they deserved it. It does a disservice to them as well, in addition to a disservice to the fans who want to follow to have that game on Twitch. I watched it on my phone. It was ridiculous. But it was still a very good game. And so let's talk about that. I came away, given the absences, on the road against a good team that still had some, you know, I mean, this is, Jess Fishlock was there. Kim Little was there. The Rain, even though they were limited in terms of their personnel, still had some really good players on the field. Tobin Heath was on the bench. He didn't play. so we don't have to talk about that, thankfully. Given sort of what they were up against, you know, I know I've said the last couple of weeks that style points don't matter in this stretch for the Thorns. They racked up some style points. They had some stretches of that game, particularly at the beginning of the second half, I thought, where they were really, really, really excellent. And that's, I mean, you know, I think there are reasons why you would be perfectly happy with an ugly win or even an ugly draw in this circumstance. But this wasn't that. And so I'm glad that Rein said after the game what she did, because I think the players deserve a lot of credit for stepping in and saying, I can play Thorn soccer. I sort of taking the next player up kind of perspective of I can do this. I can play in this way. And they did, and they proved it. And I think if you're a lot of teams around the league looking at the Thorns depth, looking to the next offseason right now, you're saying there are some interesting players here who I think have professional careers and might be ready for a bigger role, which, you know, I mean, it's hard to maintain that kind of depth. But I think the Thorns have it. And I think a lot of these players are proving it. I really questioned going into the game. I actually took almost for granted that the Thorns were going to move Sugita back into the center for this game. I thought with Fishlock playing centrally for the Rain, and with Little, even though she was nominally in a wide position, likes to come in quite a bit, I thought the Thorns needed to do that just to match up. And given the personnel available to the Thorns, I thought it was sort of a, you know, it was going to be important for them. Because I think playing as an eight put a lot of pressure on Olivia Moultrie. So when I saw the lineup, I was pretty surprised that they didn't do that, that they were keeping Sugita wide, that they were putting Moultrie in the eight and sort of making that ask of her. And I think it was a degree of faith in her players that Rein Wilkinson showed and that her players fulfilled and rewarded. I think Moultrie was really good in central midfield in pretty challenging circumstances with a tough, tough ask. And I think Sugita, was probably the best player on the field over the course of the game. And it's not often you see somebody who's legitimately playing as a winger. It's not like she was some fake winger who was actually playing as a central midfielder and having a fullback bomb over the top of her all day. That's not what was going on. She was playing legitimately as a wide player. And yet her usage numbers were astronomical for what you'd normally see from a wide player. She was having sort of the usage stats of a central midfielder. They were playing through her a ton, and she was so effective down that left side for the Thorns, where there were long stretches of the game, including late, where I kind of thought the Thorns might be able to nick one more to take all three, where it was the Sugade show. And so I think she was phenomenal. And in a game in which she was among the most talented players on the field, certainly probably the most talented player on the field for the Thorns, she stepped up and said, and carried the team. And then just everywhere else where the Thorns got contributions, I thought it was extraordinary. That's a tough one. That's a really tough ask to go in and to get a result at all and to get a result to play well. And I couldn't be more impressed, with the team that went out there and did it the way they did. I think, you know, Sam Coffey was a big part of that. I think she was, again, excellent as a six. She is the next day flew out to join the U.S. women's national team for the remainder of the tournament down in Mexico. I'll say this: if she's going to play, great, fine. I mean, it's a huge opportunity for her. Then great. If she's actually going to play, if she's going to get on the field, and get, you know, a meaningful number of minutes, then I'm happy for it. And it's worth the Thorns missing her for Gotham, even if it costs them a result. And it might, because now the cupboard is really, really bare in terms of who the Thorns can play. But it's worth it if she's going to actually go down and play. But look, they just had her in camp for a couple of weeks. They had two friendlies during that time. She played the same number of minutes that I did.
It's true.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Yeah, it's zero, by the way.
I didn't play. I also did not play. And if that's going to be how it goes again, I think the Thorns should be pretty ticked off about this. And frankly, I wouldn't mind if there was some pushback. I think the national team has, for lots of reasons that we could fill many podcasts talking about, not been particularly respectful of NWSL clubs in terms of both the scheduling of U.S. women's national team games and in terms of who they're calling up for these games. Then that's just sort of a general comment over the course of the 9-year history of NWSL. And I think for a long time, they kind of got away with it because the league was, I mean, for goodness sake, the league was basically run by the Federation for a lot of years. NWSL is growing beyond that relationship. Thankfully, that's a good thing. And so that's excellent, but, you know, there's been basically no sort of public pushback on a lot of this. I think there should start to be some pushback because the league is important. And the league and maintaining the health of the league and having a good, competitive, consistent league is critical for the future of the national team. And so, you know, if this is going to be a circumstance in which Sam Coffey is going to miss a game, fly down to Mexico to train with the national team and not to play again, I wouldn't mind at all if the Thorns, somebody with the Thorns, sent a little bit of a shot across the bow and basically said, stop doing this. Like, we have important games to play here. And it's better for these players to be playing important games against good teams than going down to practice in Monterrey or wherever the camp is set up at the time. So I guess when I saw that announcement, it raised an eyebrow for me, because I just don't have a ton of confidence, frankly, that this call up is necessary. And that she's actually going to be used. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Vlatko is taking the opportunity now that they're sort of in the semifinal and final of this tournament. They've qualified for the things they need to qualify for. Maybe he's going to take this opportunity now to get her field time and to get her working into sort of the national team proper. If so, great. No problems. But if not, come on, man.
Yeah. At that point, it's like, why? Why even bring her down there if she's not going to play? You know, yeah. You're not that thin as far as injuries where, oh gosh, I absolutely need her right now. So if you're not just giving her the opportunity, then what are we doing? what is the purpose? And I think that, you know, Rhian Wilkinson is heavily involved with the Canada national team. Maybe she does take the shot across the bow at the neighbors to the south and says, hey, Vlatko, what the heck, man? Like, we're trying to win this last game prior to getting everybody back. And you take away one of the individuals who is key to that occurring, is going to make things tough. Gotham is no slouches. You know, they've got some players missing like everybody, but, you know, it's going to be, as every game has been in this stretch, a battle.
The league is important.
Yeah, the league matters.
And it's a good league.
Yes, top to bottom, good league. You know, anybody can beat anybody for the most part on any given night. I mean, it's that much parity that exists. So every person being there counts. So we'll see how that impacts the Thorns against Gotham. I think that Coffey has emerged as somebody who, you know, I compared Eric Williamson to Hina Sugata earlier. I think that in a lot of ways, he's like a blend of what Hina provides and what Sam Coffey provides. You know, he might even lean more in the Coffey direction, just given his level of contribution in the last few weeks. And it'd be interesting to hear Kelly Hubley's take on that, on what player on her team she thinks Eric compares the most to. I might ask her that this week. That'd be kind of cool to
I think you should also, ask the other side, which is,
yes,
who is the Timbers equivalent of Kelly Hubley? And you should ask Eric that.
Yeah.
Who's your money on? I think it's probably Laris Mabiala, right?
Might be Zach. I don't know, tall, long legs, you know, athletic kind of center back. She's further along in her career and development than Zach is, but and is obviously a reliable person back there. I could say Mabiala. Yeah, that's that's an interesting two people to compare to one another in terms of their play styles, but it works.
If you're looking for some hard hitting journalism, there's a story for you.
Yeah, let's just compare everybody on both teams and just spend the next half hour saying who's who on each team and then just confuse everybody. Get everyone mixed up like at PTFC for Peace when there was like 50 people on the field at one time. So, yeah.
You know, I will say, and this is veering sort of into a hot take segment to be named later. I do think there's another side of this coin, though, and a broader conversation to have with NWSL. Which is, you know, in light of the fact that they have Challenge Cup and in light of the fact that they have the ICC for a couple teams and these various other sort of tournaments, and in light of the fact that they have pretty regular interference from the national team, whether it's for something like this or the Olympics or the World Cup, or, I mean, most years there is a significant stretch of an international window in which a lot of players are gone. I think it's time for NWSL to sort of bite the bullet and extend their season so that they can take more meaningful breaks during this stuff. There's, you know, no reason that I can discern why they're not sort of running their preseason sort of on a similar February to November schedule as MLS does. They have at least as many complications as MLS. And although, you know, I don't think it's optimal for the league to be stepping away for weeks at a time or going quiet for weeks at a time, I think it's better to have more good games than just to have games. And if every one of the games without sort of the national teamers was like Thorns Reign, I might feel differently. But the reality is they're not. There are a lot of pretty bad games during this stretch, and I think it's important that teams are, you know, not having regular stretches in which they're missing You know, I mean, both the Reign and the Thorns were missing most of their starters this last game. And that's not optimal.
No, and back to the subject of you know, exposure and being on the right channel or streaming service or whatever, that makes it harder to sell. Yeah. You know,
CBS wants to see Sophia Smith. They want to see Megan Rapinoe. Yeah, I agree. But, you know, I mean, so, you know, I come down hard on USSF for not being sufficiently respectful of the league. And I think that's fair. But there's also an element of the league needs to do some things on its end that make these conflicts less intractable. And that makes this a little bit more viable. The other point is the rate at which NWSL teams play games is insane. and it's not good for injuries. It's not good for athletes. And so I think that's something that in sort of the process of the maturation of the league, and look, it's been 9 years now. So you're kind of losing the young league excuse. It's now time to have it be the schedule laid out on sort of a more viable and more realistic timeline. That's not causing a bunch of games to be played shorthand. That's not having, you know, Saturday, Wednesday playing every 3 or 4 days consistently through the summer, kinds of dynamics.
Definitely. I don't think that's a terribly hot take. I think that every player in NWSL and probably almost every coach would agree with you, you know, stretching out the season, is a benefit to all and would allow for longer breaks and, give this league an opportunity to showcase its best of the best in more lengthy windows, you know? So, you know, the league, it has a lot of different avenues through which it can continue to grow. And I think that being more cognizant of how these stretches of games impact players from a health perspective, from an availability perspective due to the national teams, etc., will just be another example of them doing the right thing and continue to lead the way on that. So it'll be interesting to see what team the Thorns field on Saturday, but that game kicks off at 7:30 p.m. at Providence Park. Timbers play Sunday night, 7:30 p.m. also at Providence Park. That'll be a fun one against Vancouver to wrap up this pair of Cascadia matchups. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, a win there would all but seal the Cascadia Cup for the Timbers for this season.
Yeah, there'd be some conceivable possibilities for the Sounders still to catch up, but it would look pretty dire for Seattle from a goal difference perspective and all of that. So, if the Timbers win on Sunday, I think the way I put it on Twitter, they'll have one hand on the Cascadia Cup. That would take a pretty wild meltdown to turn that around.
Yeah, and the NWSL version, just cut it in half. Just take Timber Joey's chainsaw and just cut it in half, because it's been a draw the whole freaking way, the whole season. And they've played so many times at this point, just nobody has shown their superiority yet. So just give them half and half. That's what I say.
Yeah.
Sure. Yet. Yet. Exactly. They could meet in the postseason, and that would be exciting.
That would be exciting.
A heck of a matchup. And, you know, full strength, both of those teams, one could argue, top two teams in terms of top to bottom talent in NWSL. You know, some San Diego Wave fans are beating down my door right now saying, what about us? Same with Chicago. But those to me are the two teams.
It feels like they're kind of on a collision course, right? I mean, especially the way the games between them have played out. They've been super tight games. They've been really competitive. I generally agree with you that I think those are probably the two best teams in the league, even if they have not sort of separated themselves in the table just yet. If I had to put money on two teams that I thought were going to be, you know, heading in the direction of a final, those would probably be my first two.
And how cool of a final would that be? I mean, think about that, like Reign versus Thorns in an NWSL final.
I'm going to drop some news into the podcast in a second.
What's that?
I mean, it's not like my news, to be clear.
Okay.
It's just, here's an update of something that happened. We found out where the final's going to be. It's going to be in Washington, D.C. So Thorns fans and Rain fans flying across the country to go to a game in Washington, D.C. to watch the final. That'd be fun. You don't seem excited.
That's a long way to go, bro. And yeah, I mean, D.C. weather, you know, I'm traveling out that way in August.
And you're going to D.C. in August?
Yeah, 90
Nobody degree. To blame but yourself here.
Yeah, that's all me. so, you know, it's 90 degrees and like thick humidity right now. Even in the fall, it's not really great. That kind of sucks. I'm not a huge fan of that as a locale for that game, but. You know.
I think Bank of California Stadium, frankly, it would have been like kind of the obvious other choice.
Yeah, that would have been sick, right? Yeah, you know, and I'm sure the players would have preferred that. Yeah, it's an easier travel.
I mean, my brother and sister-in-law live in D.C., so I shouldn't be like, I'm not going to D.C.
Yeah, and my brother lives there, so I should also not, you know, come out and say, oh, I hate Washington, D.C. because I'm going to be visiting him. So it is what it is, but As a neutral site, it's interesting. It's interesting to choose that as the neutral site too, the year after the Spirit win the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
So and they're probably not, given where they're at right now, gonna be in that position again. Who knows? Maybe
dangerous team though.
Turn things around. Yeah, I mean they have the talent there to potentially turn it around. But it
does kind of feel like the Thorns and the Rain are on a collision course for sort of a high stakes playoff showdown at some point. And, you know, even though there's no rational reason to believe that'll happen, it like just the narrative arc of the season feels like that's the logical conclusion for at least one of these teams having a high stakes game in the playoffs. Because,
yeah,
and look, I mean, you know, that'd be must see TV that hopefully the league wouldn't put on Twitch.
Put it on CBS, man.
Yeah.
You got the Paramount deal. You got the CBS sports games going on. You got a couple games that have been on big CBS. Get that thing across the finish line. These are two unbelievably exciting teams. And if those teams meet in a playoff game or like a semifinal or even a first round matchup, must see TV. People from all around the country who love soccer, no matter who they are, would tune in for that. Do it. And that will wrap it up for us here on Soccer Made in Portland. Yeah, time to tune out of this podcast. Yes. Yes. Tune out of this podcast. But after you do, be sure to leave a review for us. We've gotten some new ones that some have been positive, some have been negative.
Should we read mean reviews on the podcast?
I'm going to read a mean review right now.
All right. Yes.
So we are pulling up the Apple reviews for the podcast. One from user SJ881261. It's an interesting username. On April 7th, gave us 5 stars. Best soccer podcast. Best source of info and commentary on Portland soccer. Look forward to episodes dropping weekly. June 10th, 2022 from Business Dude. Dude spelled D-O-O-D-E, gave us 1 star. He says his headline was "Great Cure for Insomnia." So good that we're helping him with a very serious health issue.
Yeah, honestly, like that's not 1 star. There are lots of evenings where I'm like laying awake, where I would like 5-star the heck out of something that could get me to go to sleep. So,
dude, if you cured my insomnia, I would like buy you a house.
Apparently I can do that.
Yes.
Have you tried?
So we've done that for Business Dude. He says, quote, "Has so much potential, unfortunately a real snoozer."
Well, you need to sleep well if you're going to go crush the business world during the day. So I think Business Dude was a little bit harsh with the 1 star because really, you know, helping him kind of get at the core of what he does.
Get some sleep, man.
Yeah.
If you need to listen to us beforehand and play the entire podcast start to finish in order to sleep, go ahead and do that. We still get the stream. It's fine. But yeah, that's your opinion. And whatever your opinion is, please share it with us. We love your feedback. Leave us a review there on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get them. Subscribe, tell your friends, interact with us on Twitter. We're both active, whether for better or worse, users on Twitter. So hit us up there. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week.